the Court of Appeals. We are proceeding with this oral argument by Zoom today, as you're well aware. The next case on our calendar today is A23-1367, State of Minnesota versus Isabel Ann Gendron. Council will each have 15 minutes for your primary argument, and appellant will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. There is a timer in the grid view, which shows how much time you have remaining, so you can watch that as you go along. And we ask that you please introduce yourself and the party you represent at the beginning of your argument. We are recording the oral argument today. It will be available on our website tomorrow, maybe even later today, but no other recordings are permitted except with the express prior permission of the Minnesota Court of Appeals. So with that, counsel for appellant, you can proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. Under section 169.8.20 and 171.177, a person is only guilty of the crime of test refusal if they are offered both a blood and urine test. This court recently affirmed that reading of the statutes in Nash versus the Commissioner of Public Safety, in which it held a circumstance where a person refuses a blood test but is not offered a urine test would not support a test refusal charge. So the key question in this case is whether the state possessed substantial evidence that would allow a jury to reasonably find that the arresting officer offered, that is, gave Ms. Gendron the choice of submitting to a urine test. Because an officer informing someone that they have a warrant to take a blood or urine test does not constitute an offer, the answer to that question is no. Ms. Gendron therefore asks this court to reverse her test refusal conviction. Now, I want to start off by noting that we are not disputing any of the district court's findings of facts in this case. And so as this court has held repeatedly, application of a statute to the undisputed facts of a case involves a question of law. And as this court knows, review of such questions are de novo. And this court does not defer to a district court's ruling. So I'll start off by giving the two relevant definitions in Merriam-Webster for the word offer. The first one is to present for acceptance or rejection and to make available. Now here in this case, the arresting officer told my client, Ms. Gendron, that he had a warrant authorizing him to take either blood or urine. The district court determined that a jury could reasonably find that the officer, quote unquote, offered Ms. Gendron a urine test because he told her he was authorized to do both, take both tests, excuse me. But informing a person that an officer is authorized to administer a urine test is not the same thing as offering the test. It does not fit under either definition of the dictionary definitions of offer. Now, I direct this court to its unpublished decision in State versus Hamon. I recognize it is non-presidential, but I find it to be highly persuasive in our case. Now, the reason why that case is so clearly on point is because, like in this case, the officer in that case similarly told the defendant that he was authorized to take either a blood or urine test. But unlike in our case, the officer actually went one step further and told the defendant, I'm first going to offer you the blood test, and then if you refuse that test, I will then offer you a urine test. The officer followed through with his promise and offered the blood test. And after 48 minutes of equivocating, the defendant's equivocating, the officer said, I've deemed you to have refused the test, and did not then follow through and offer a urine test. Now, in that case, just like in ours, the defendant was on notice that the officer was authorized to take either test, but all the same in that case, the court reversed the test refusal conviction because it held that simply telling the defendant that the officer has at his disposal two different tests was not the same thing as offering those tests. Now, I also want to distinguish. Yes.
Respondent argues that appellant's conduct constituted a blanket refusal of all testing when she was presented with the warrant for testing. Do you agree that the record shows that her conduct constituted a blanket refusal? And even if it did, is that relevant to the issue here as you're framing it, which is whether she was offered the two different options?
So my answers are no and no to the two questions that Your Honor posed. The blanket refusal that the state claims Ms. Gendron made implies that she refused two different tests. But logically speaking, you cannot refuse something that is not offered to you. She was never offered a urine test. At the scene where she was arrested, the officer told her, come back to the station, we'll offer you a blood test, and if you pass that blood test, we'll let you go. Then when the officer started the recording, he said, we're going to do a blood test. Started his body cam recording, he said, we're going to do a blood test. And then told Ms. Gendron that he was authorized to take two tests, and then continued to ask Mr. Gendron to give blood, and told her there was a phlebotomist in the other room, and you should come with me in another room so that they can draw your blood. A urine test was never offered, and logically speaking, Ms. Gendron cannot refuse a test that was never offered. And that goes into the answer to your next question is that relevant? Is a blanket refusal relevant for purposes of the statutory requirement that the police officer offer both tests? And the answer is no, because the plain language of the statute does not provide that a blanket refusal or some preemptive refusal relieves the officer of an obligation to offer both tests. The definition of the crime is you are offered both tests and you refuse both tests. And in this case, we do not have the element that Ms. Gendron was refused both tests. Now, I want to note, too, that the legislature had it wanted to provide such an exception to the requirement that both tests are offered. It could have. It knows how to do that. It provides exceptions to all sorts of requirements in criminal statutes all the time. And so given that it didn't do that in this case, I'd ask the court not to read such an exception into the plain language of the statute, because it need not delve further than the plain language to conclude that such an exception doesn't exist.
Do you agree, however, that there could be hypothetically a belligerent person whose conduct is so disruptive that the officer is not able to even make the offer of both tests and never is able to get there? And so the refusal can be deemed by conduct. You agree with that general statement, right?
Well, yeah, I think the case law supports that a person can refuse testing by conduct, constructively refuse.
And it wouldn't be fatal to the prosecution that the officer in that case hadn't gotten the words out, I'm offering you a blood test, would you take it? I'm offering you a urine test. If the person was so disruptive and the officer wasn't able to make those offers, it's not your position that that still wouldn't constitute a refusal, right?
I think theoretically that could constitute a refusal, I suppose. But I mean, look at Hagen, look at Mahank, right? The officer just has to say one sentence to the individual that's arrested and can satisfy the statutory requirement. In both those cases, the officer just simply told the person, will you take a blood or urine test? And that satisfied the requirement. And the officer could have done the same in this case. And I also want to distinguish this case from the hypothetical situation that you've presented, Judge Ead, because in this case, there was an exchange between the officer that extended, 20 minutes of time, right? I understand that Ms. Gendron was combative during the conversation, But the police officer continued to try to get her to take a blood test, even after noting that she was combative. And so ultimately, this isn't a situation where Ms. Gendron was so belligerent that the officer couldn't get a word in edgewise. The officer could have, in any of those moments where he had an opportunity to speak, offered a urine test, but he didn't. And that's by his own admissions, and that's by the district court's findings. A urine test was simply not uttered after, or the word urine was simply not uttered after the officer told Ms. Gendron that he was authorized to take blood or urine. And given that is an essential element of the crime of test refusal, again, as this court recently held, the state has failed to establish probable cause here, and the district court's ruling to the contrary should be reversed, as should Ms. Gendron's conviction. Now, I see that I have 5 minutes remaining. If there are no further questions from the court, I would cede the remainder of my time until the rebuttal.
I have nothing else.
I have one further question for you here. I just want to look at your brief here for a second before I ask the question. So in your brief, you state the issue, I think, is whether the district court erred when it denied appellant's dismissal motion because the state's evidence did not establish probable cause to believe that the officer offered appellant a urine test. And my question is, given that she was convicted, should we review this as a sufficiency of the evidence challenge rather than a challenge to the probable cause motion?
So the parties resolved this case by Minnesota Criminal Procedure Rule 26.01 Subdivision 4. Which essentially disallows this court from reviewing issues other than those preserved by the parties for review.
Right.
So we are asking this court to review whether or not the district court erred, basically what I stated in my issue statement.
In that motion determination.
That's right. But what I will say is this, that the standards don't depart that far from each other, because as this court has held, once the defendant presents evidence challenging probable cause, then the relevant inquiry for this court to determine whether or not probable cause exists is, that the record establishes that the prosecutor possesses substantial evidence that will be admissible at trial that would justify denial of a motion for a directed verdict for acquittal. And I cite to in my case, the relevant standard for review for a denial of a motion for a directed verdict for acquittal is a determination that the state's evidence, when viewed in the light most favorable to the state, would be sufficient to sustain a conviction. So all told, the standards do not differ very much. And again, I do think that because we do not dispute any of the factual findings of the district court, that this is a purely legal question for this court. And so it can review under that standard.
I have a follow-up question, unless you do, Judge Cochran. So I just want to go back to your argument earlier about the legislature could have included in the statute an exception for a blanket refusal. Do I understand your position to be that even if your client had, and this is a hypothetical, obviously, but even if your client had said from the very beginning of the testing period, there is no test that you can offer me that I will take, that would not constitute a refusal in your view, unless the officer had previously said, I am offering you a blood test, will you take it? I am offering you a urine test, will you take it?
I mean, I don't take a strong position on that. I mean, I you know, that would be a nitpickier argument because that case would be closer to the unpublished case in Urban, right? Because in Urban, the defendant in that case said he was refusing all tests. Implicit in that is that he recognized that there were other tests that he could have taken. So in a situation where somebody says, you can ask me to take any and all tests and I will refuse them, there at least is clear indication that they are aware that an alternative is available to them. By contrast, in our case, there's simply no indication that Ms. Gendron is aware that, I mean, in fact, she testifies to this, that there was an alternative test that she could have taken. And that's supported by the record because, again, the officer never asked her or offered her the choice of taking a urine test instead of a blood test. So, you know, if I wanted to stick to my guns, my position would be, you know, no such exception is found in the plain language of the statute. But I think in a situation where a defendant makes known that they are aware of varying types of tests, I noticed that my time is up. May I finish my answer, Judge Cochran?
Yes, you may.
Okay. In a situation where a defendant makes known that there are a variety of tests that they can take, that they can choose from, and they state that, you know, I'm not taking any of them, then an officer could be relieved of that duty. But again, that such an exception, again, is not found in the language of the statute or in precedent. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. So for respondent, you can proceed when you're ready.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Sam Schabel. I represent the city of Rochester and the respondent here. I'd like to start before I get into my prepared statement and just push back on the idea that there's no dispute about the facts here. I think that the district court found that an offer was made, or at least a reasonable jury could find that an offer was made, and that's in dispute. But I'll go on with my prepared argument. Appellant would like the court to focus on what Trooper Fay did or did not say, but it's the state's position that appellant's words and actions are more significant to the analysis. Ms. Gendron made explicitly clear she refused to participate in any testing. And for that reason, the state urges the court to uphold the ruling below denying her motion to dismiss. Case law supports the state's position here. The cases cited by both parties can be more readily distinguished by the behavior of the defendants than the law enforcement officers in those cases. In Haman, 2012, unpublished case, the defendant was deemed to have refused after he delayed testing for 48 minutes without ever agreeing to take the urine test he requested. But that was overturned because blood was not specifically offered to that defendant. So that was a refusal by conduct, essentially, because he never really committed to a yes or a no answer to the question of whether or not he would take the urine test until he was deemed to refuse, and then he immediately backtracked. The only published case that either appellant or respondent are citing is the Hagen case, where the defendant was offered a blood or a urine test, but never replied at all. And the court specifically held that the officer is not required to read from a script directing a defendant to take one test, and if they refuse, to offer the other, because they never would have gotten the no from the Hagen defendant. So again, that's a refusal by conduct.
In Hagen, the officer stated, will you take a blood or urine test, question mark. That's how the opinion reads in terms of the facts. Here, the trooper stated that the trooper had a signed warrant for your blood or urine. So isn't this case factually distinguishable from Hagen or Hagen?
Well, Your Honor, I think that the court goes on in the opinion to hold that the court, that the officer was not required to direct the defendant to take one test, and if they refuse, offer the other. And I think it's similar to what appellant is arguing here, that that initial offer didn't necessarily constitute an offer. It's my position that it did constitute an offer. But I think the base holding there was that you're not required necessarily, if you don't get a no, if it's a refusal by conduct, you don't then need to go on and offer the other test. Did that answer the court's question?
I think so. Although I think in the opinion, this court said here, because the officer initially offered Hagen a choice of either test, the officer's actions satisfy the statutory requirement that an alternative test be offered. So I'm wondering, you know, factually here, can you say that the record demonstrates that the officer initially offered a choice of either test?
Well, I think the record here demonstrates that Trooper Fay came and presented a warrant to Ms. Gendron, and her immediate reply was a variation of, I'm not doing anything for you, with profanity, vehement, you know, urgent reply. I will not do anything for you. I counted in the transcript. She said, I'm not doing anything for you, or a variation of it, six times, interrupting and often speaking over the trooper. It's the first thing that she says when she's presented with the warrant. And she interrupted every time he opened his mouth, and he could not get a word in edgewise. So I think that's the distinguishing factor on these facts, is before any offer, you know, under the appellant's definition, before any offer was made, she made clear she would not participate in any testing whatsoever. And if I could go on, Your Honor, the other case that I was going to talk about is Urban, an unpublished 2009 case before Haman, where the defendant requested a urine test, like in Haman. But an hour later, also like Haman, when the urine test was finally available, he refused all testing. And this was upheld, even though a blood test was never offered, or at least the record is silent on whether or not it was ever offered, because Urban refused all testing. And the court in that unpublished case held that a refusal of all testing preempts the requirement to offer an alternative test. They specifically held, we note that the refusal of all testing implies that appellant was aware there were other tests available and that he expressly refused the urine test and any other option that may have been available. And so, like I said, in this case, she flatly refused immediately in a completely unambiguous way. And appellant asked this court for a requirement that law enforcement, when presented with that situation, read from a script, even where a driver has indicated repeatedly and vehemently they will not submit to any test. Trooper Fay did tell Ms. Gendron he had a warrant for her blood or urine, but again, couldn't really go any further than that. And like appellant, I resorted to the dictionary because the statute doesn't provide any sort of definition for offer. And Black's Law Dictionary provides essentially two definitions. The first is the act or an instance of presenting something for acceptance. And the second is the more general contract definition of a promise to do or refrain from doing some specified thing in the future. It's not really relevant here. And I think the first definition is relevant and does apply. The act or an instance of presenting something for acceptance. The state's position would be that the trooper did offer a blood or urine test to appellant. And before any sort of elaboration on that could be made, she instituted a blanket refusal. He brought to or before, you know, an instance of presenting something for acceptance. And she made her answer very clear. The ruling for the appellant here would encourage defendants, A, to be as noncompliant as possible. It would force law enforcement officers to read from a script in the face of clear, unambiguous noncompliance. And it creates an open-ended question about when a defendant has actually refused. If Ms. Gendron's conduct is not a blanket refusal to participate in any testing whatsoever, then I think if this court holds it, that wasn't a blanket refusal, then I think it opens the question of what is a refusal. And it further muddies the waters here. I think there's also an argument.
You agree, Mr. Schabel, that Trooper Fay never said, do you want to provide a urine sample or I will offer you a urine test? You agree, right? The transcript is what it is.
Yes, sir.
In fact, the only time he mentions urine in the relevant portion of their interview is when he says the signed search warrant is for your blood or urine.
That's correct. I agree with that. And go
ahead.
Sorry. I was going to say, I would concede, as I do in my brief, that if Ms. Gendron had said, I don't want to take a blood test, or I'm afraid of needles, or the warrant says urine, or anything other than I will not do anything for you, I refuse to comply, then I think we'd be in a different position. But I think that...
But don't the fact... What do you make of the fact that the phlebotomist was there and the rest of the conversation, to the extent there's any discussion of testing, it's about blood? We're going to do... He says, we're going to do a blood draw. And then she says, no, we're not. And do you want to provide a blood sample? No, I'm not. No, I'm not. So, I mean, I think I understand your point, but what impact, if any, do you think there should be to those circumstances that urine only comes up once in a description of the warrant, and that the fact that the surrounding circumstances and conversation all go toward the option being a blood test?
Judge Ead, I think that I don't necessarily want to second guess about why officers would have had a phlebotomist and a blood kit ready to go, but why that may have been easier or more preferable to them than a urine test. I understand where the court is going with this, but I think that my position, the state's position here, would be that in the process of talking to Ms. Gendron about what was expedient or what could be done right now, she made clear she wouldn't participate in that or anything else. I'm not sure about the decorum rules here, but she used so much profanity, you know.
Well, is your position that this was a refusal by conduct, or was it a refusal by express statement of refusal, blanket refusal, in other words? Because the way I read the district court's order, the district court seems to take it not as a refusal by conduct, but that she refused what you've characterized to be the offer of blood or urine when he described the search warrant.
Your Honor, I think I would be hard pressed to separate it into one or the other of those two distinct categories. I mean, I think essentially she did both. It was both a refusal by conduct and an express refusal to participate.
Do you agree that her subjective understanding of her options is important? Your counterpart seemed to argue that whether or not she understood that she had the option, if we were to take her statement, I'm not doing the S word and you can suck my D word with all that, as a blanket refusal, that would be more persuasive as a blanket refusal if there was some evidence that she understood she had an option to do urine. So under the law, do you think that her subjective understanding of her options is an important consideration or a necessary consideration?
I think that the purpose of the statute as written, 171.177, has a noble intention of not boxing defendants into taking a blood test if they have a fear of needles, or not taking a urine test if they have a fear of, or just uncomfortable by the idea of urinating in front of another person. And the idea is here with this statute is to give freedom to those people to say, I don't want a needle stuck in me, or I don't want to use the bathroom in front of somebody else. And so it's not really about whether or not she explicitly understands what the options are, but rather that she's given an out if one of those is really distasteful to her as the driver. And I think the law presumes in a lot of places. I mean, the whole implied consent advisory is a unique area of law where we don't necessarily presume all of the things are known to a defendant or that they understand the law. But I think in this particular case, the purpose of this statute is to prevent a defendant from having a sample taken from them by force in a way that's uncomfortable from them, not necessarily to make sure that she understands exactly what her options are. And again, she comes out of the gate immediately with a blanket refusal to do anything when she's been presented with a warrant, when information has been given to her. She's not exploring that. So it puts it on the trooper to educate her about what her options are in the face of belligerence. And it puts no responsibility on her to have any understanding or to participate in the process. And I think that's one of the downfalls of the approach that appellant is pushing here, is that we're putting a lot of emphasis on what the trooper does or says, and it means that the defendant can be as belligerent and noncompliant as possible, muddy the waters as much as they want to, and we don't know when they have refused, and we don't know what they understand or don't, when we're already talking about a driver who's, you know, ideally intoxicated and doesn't have the best understanding of what's going on. And so I think it's a mistake to to rely on what was the defendant's subjective understanding, but rather to look at their words and actions and look at the words and actions of law enforcement and determine reasonably whether Ms. Gendron or any driver is signaling that they won't comply with anything, or whether they are afraid of needles or unwilling to give a blood sample or unwilling to give a urine sample for whatever personal reasons that they have. Does that answer the question?
I think you've addressed it. Thank you.
I think that I have said all the things I was prepared to say, and without any further questions, I note there's only about a minute left and I would cede that time.
Okay, I don't see any further questions, so thank you. And any rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, please. So just off the jump, I'll push back against Mr. Schaple's allegation that there's a factual dispute here. Again, there is no factual dispute. Ms. Gendron herself testified that she was presented with a warrant that informed her that the officer was authorized to take either a blood or urine test. Our contention is that simply telling somebody that does not meet the legal definition of an offer. And that is a legal question. And that is the open question that the district court left for the jury. But again, that is a legal determination and it should not have been left to the jury. Now, as far as counsel's assertion that somehow Officer Fay couldn't get a word in edgewise, that's just untrue. I mean, there was a conversation back and forth. We cannot contest that Ms. Gendron was not non-compliant. She was not, upset in that situation. But, the officer himself at some point asked Ms. Gendron to move into another room. And Ms. Gendron, to her credit, asked for what? And at that point, the officer could have offered, well, to take a blood or urine test. Do you want to take a blood or urine test? And Ms. Gendron could have then continued on with her tirades and whatnot, and that could have been deemed a constructive refusal. And so this notion that, the purpose of the statute, as opposing counsel argues, is to give a person in Ms. Gendron's situation the freedom of choosing one test or another, she was not given that freedom, right? She was not given that freedom. And I think that is what, as counsel concedes, is the purpose of 171.177 is so someone can have that freedom, and the case law provides that if they are not given that freedom, then their convictions must be overturned. It does not support a charge. Those circumstances do not support a charge. Now, I want to distinguish Urban too from this case, not only in noting that the defendant in that case expressly revealed that they recognized that there was more than one test available. They said, I'm going to refuse all testing. But also the record is silent as to whether an alternative test was offered. So this court had to glean, based on circumstantial evidence, Mr. Urban saying that he was refusing all testing, that an alternative test was offered, and had to base its decision on the fact that the officer read the implied consent advisory, and the implied consent advisory provides, those three options for the court to read. This record is not silent here as to whether or not an offer was made. An offer was not made. An offer was not made. And so this court need not speculate based on circumstantial evidence as to whether or not Ms. Gendron knew whether or not there was a test available, because at the jump, an offer was never made. And so because the statute requires that an offer for both tests be made, the charge and the conviction must be overturned. Now, I will further note that this notion that Ms. Gendron was informed of the opportunity or the choice of taking a urine test because the officer informed her that there was a warrant So the state noted that there are two Black's Law Dictionary definitions of the word offer. One of them requires some sort of the presentation and acceptance by the person being offered the thing. I will note that when Officer Fay told Ms. Gendron that he had a warrant for blood or urine, he wasn't asking for a response. So in that situation, it doesn't make sense that you would expect Ms. Gendron to accept an offer for urine, because she wasn't being asked to respond to anything. Now, finally, I will note that there are some policy arguments being made by Mr. Schaeble. I would note that because plain language governs here, that those arguments should largely not be considered by this court. But I mean, this notion that his interpretation of the statute is clearer than my interpretation, I think that's false. Because at the end of the day, all we're asking this court to do is determine whether or not an officer asked a defendant whether or not they want to take one test or another, as simple as it was done in Hagen. And so that could not be more clear. So for all of those reasons, again, we'd ask that Ms. Gendron's conviction for test refusal be reversed. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you to both attorneys for your helpful arguments here today. The matter is submitted and we will issue our opinion within the statutory timeframe. That concludes the oral portion of our calendar today. So we will now be in recess. Have a good day.